The topic today is about Samatha and Vipassana. It's from Anguttara Nikaya number 4. The Buddha said, "Now monks, these four types of individuals are to be found existing in the world. Which four? There is the case of the individual who has attained internal tranquility of awareness. It means concentration, but not insight into phenomena through heightened discernment. Then there is the case of the individual who has attained insight into phenomena through heightened discernment, but not internal tranquility of awareness. Then there is the case of the individual who has attained neither internal tranquility of awareness nor insight into phenomena through heightened discernment. And then there is the case of the individual who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment. So there are four types of beings. One, attain concentration but no vipassana, no insight. Another one, who attain insight but no concentration. And the third person, who has neither concentration nor insight. And the fourth, who has both concentration and insight. And the Buddha continued to say, the individual who has attained internal tranquility of awareness but not insight into phenomena through heightened discernment should approach an individual who has attained insight into phenomena through heightened discernment and ask him, how should fabrications or formations, sankhara, how should fabrications or formations be regarded? How should they be investigated? How should they be seen with insight? The other will answer in line with what he has seen and experienced. Fabrications or formations should be regarded in this way. Fabrications should be investigated in this way. Fabrications or formations should be seen in this way with insight. Then eventually he, the first one, the first person, will become one who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment. Okay, so now regarding to insight meditation, a person who has concentration but has no insight. So he asks another person who has insight, how the formation to be regarded, to be investigated. So regarding this question in Sanyutta Nikaya, in Sanyutta Nikaya, Mahakotita, Venerable Mahakotita asked Venerable Sariputta. He asked, in order for a person who aim to achieve a stream enterer, Sotapanna, how should he attain, how should he attain to the five aggregates of clinging? So now almost same with this question. This question is, how should fabrication be regarded? So fabrication is sankhara or formation. What it means, formation, which is form, which is produced by causes, is called fabrication, is called formation. So what are the things produced by cause, by causes? It's our five aggregates of clinging: our mind and body. Our mind and body are produced by causes, so it is called fabrication or formation, or in Pali we call sankhara. So Venerable Sariputta answered Venerable Mahakotita. He said that if a practitioner see the five aggregates as he gives 11 ways of seeing, 11 ways to regard five aggregates of clinging. He says, first, five aggregates should be regarded as impermanence, anicca, as dukkha, painful or unsatisfactory, as a disease, a cancer, an arrow, should be regarded as an arrow, as painful, an affliction, a lien, a dissolution, an emptiness, and not a self. This is called yoniso manasikara. If a practitioner see five aggregates in such a way, this is called wise attention. Yoniso manasikara. So this 11, number one, as impermanence. Number two, as unsatisfactory. Number three, a disease. Number four, a cancer. Number five, an arrow. Number six, as painful. Number seven, an affliction. Number eight, alien. Number nine, a dissolution. Number 10, an emptiness. And number 11, not a self. So this 11 way of regard five aggregate can be summarized into three characteristics. That is anicca, dukkha, anatta. Impermanence, unsatisfactory, and not a self. So as the 11 way, number one, as impermanent, under the heading of impermanent. Then look, unsatisfactory, a disease, a cancer, an arrow, painful, and affliction, this under the heading of dukkha, unsatisfactory. And alien, stranger, is under the heading of not a self, anatta. And dissolution is under the heading of impermanence, anicca. And emptiness, not a self, is under the heading of anatta, not a self. So this 11 way of regard five aggregate can be summarized into three characteristics: impermanence, unsatisfactory, and not a self. And if Venerable Sariputta say, if a practitioner can attend to this five aggregate in this way, he is sure to attain stream enterer. And Mahakotita asks again, how can he achieve one's returner, Sagadagami? After attaining stream enterer, how can he achieve the second path, that is one's returner, Sagadagami? And Venerable Sariputta gives the same answer. Then he asks again, how to attain number third, Anagami, non-returner? And Venerable Sariputta gives the same answer. Even to achieve arahantship, we still have to contemplate our five aggregates as impermanence, as suffering or unsatisfactory or undesirable or painful, and not a self. So this is how fabrication should be regarded. Then how should they be investigated? You can investigate them according to cause and effect. For example, material, our body, mind and body, is made up by five aggregates. Number one is called materiality aggregate. Number two is called feeling aggregates. Number three, perception aggregate. Number four, formation aggregate. And number five, consciousness aggregate. Then you should investigate the causes of these five aggregates. For example, materiality aggregate. What are the causes for the arising of materiality aggregate? So this answer the question, how should they be investigated? How should the fabrication, how should the five aggregates be investigated according to cause and effect? So materiality aggregate arise depend on four factors. Number one, depend on our past karma. The past karma, even 1 hour is also considered the past. But according to Buddhism, we trace even further up to our past life. Whether you accept past life or not, the Buddha mentioned that. Then the first factor of the arising of materiality aggregate is our past karma. The second one, our consciousness. Each consciousness, whether it's wholesome consciousness or unwholesome consciousness, produce matter in the body. And this matter is made up by four elements: earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. So if the mind is in wholesome state, the wholesome mind produces healthy matter in the body, then you feel good, you feel healthy. But unwholesome mind, depression mind, sorrowful mind produce unhealthy matter in the body. So you feel down, you feel upset. So mind affects the body seriously. Okay? Then the third factor is the food we take. The food we take also can produce matter in the body. Number fourth is the temperature. The temperature in the body also can produce matter, new matter in the body again. So these are the four factors that cause arising of materiality aggregates. So one should investigate cause and effect. Once you understand cause and effect, then you understand non-self nature. Okay. Then number two, feeling aggregate. How should feeling aggregate be investigated? So the arising of feeling aggregate depends on contact, pasa. Each contact, for example, eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, bodily contact, and mind contact. Each contact causes one of three types of feeling to arise. Number one is pleasant feeling. Number two is unpleasant feeling. Number three is neither pleasant nor unpleasant feeling. So when there's contact, there is feeling. So contact is the cause, feeling is the effect. So this is how feeling aggregate should be investigated. Number three, perception aggregate. Why the perception aggregate arises is also because of contact. When the contact arises, the mind starts to perceive this good, this bad. And once perceived, then it leaves behind. Once you perceive wrongly, then next time you can recognize it again. This is the function of perception. Number four, formation aggregate. What is the cause for arising of formation aggregate? It is also due to contact. Because of the arising of contact, for example, I come to contact with pleasant object, then greed arise, lust arise, happiness arise. And when I come to contact with unpleasant object, then unpleasant feeling arise, anger arise, irritation arise, sorrow arise. So formation aggregate also arise due to contact. Number fifth, consciousness aggregate. What are the causes for arising of consciousness aggregate? Buddha say there is nama rupa, mind and matter. Mind and matter is the causes for arising of consciousness aggregate. Without matter, for example, every consciousness arise according to Abhidhamma, every consciousness arise depend on heart base. Heart base is matter. So depend on the matter, consciousness arises. Then consciousness cannot arise alone. It must arise associated with mental factors. So mind and matter, So mental factors consider mind. So mind is also one of the factors for the arising of consciousness. We have six types of consciousness: eye consciousness, nose consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. So if a practitioner can investigate cause and effect, then he understands clearly what Buddha say, not non-self, not a self. All phenomena arises due to cause and effect. Okay. Then how should this fabrication be seen with insight? With insight knowledge. In Anatta Rakkhana Sutta, in the discourse on non-self characteristic, Buddha say, how the fabrication should be seen with insight. Then Buddha answer, they should be seen with insight. Ne tang mama, ne so hang masmi, na me so atati. This all fabrication, all five aggregates should be seen with insight. They are not mine. They are not I. They are not myself. They are not mine. If we say they are mine, it's bound with craving. They are not, if we say they are, or it is I, it's bound with conceit. If we say it is myself, it's bound with wrong view of I, permanent I, a permanent I. So these five aggregates should be regarded, should be seen with insight. Ne tang mama, they are not mine. Ne tang mama, ne so hang masmi, they are not myself. And na me so atati, they are not I, they are not permanent I. So this is how the inside knowledge should be practiced. So when the person who has concentration, who has developed concentration, then he approach a person who has inside knowledge and know how to practice vipassana, inside knowledge, then he become a person who has both concentration and vipassana knowledge. Okay. And the next one, as for an individual who has attained insight into phenomena through heightened discernment, but not internal tranquility of awareness. It has vipassana insight, but no concentration. Then he should approach an individual who has attained internal tranquility of awareness and ask him, how should the mind be steady? How should the mind be? How should the mind be made to settle down? How should the mind be unified? How should it be concentrated? The other will answer in line with what he has seen and experienced. The mind should be steadied in this way. The mind should be made to settle down in this way. The mind should be unified in this way. The mind should be concentrated in this way. Then eventually he will become one who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment. So now I would like to explain to you how the mind should be concentrated. There are many ways to make the mind settle down, to make the mind concentrated. But since today we are practicing Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, so I would like to explain to you how to concentrate your mind with the breath. Okay. To concentrate the mind with the breath, first you've got to place your attention under your nostril and aware of your breath. The single object, only one single object, that is your breath. Keep your attention under the nostril and aware of the in-breath and out-breath. Naturally, you should breathe naturally and empty your mind. Don't think of anything. Cut off every engagement. Just keep your attention under the nostril and aware of in-breath and out-breath. If the mind wander off, you know the mind has wandered off. Then come back again. Don't follow the thought, go to somewhere else. The moment you know the mind wander off, then you come back. Your attention must always come back to the breath. Only then you will achieve concentration. If you let your mind wander here and there, how are you going to achieve concentration? So the moment you know the mind wander off, just know, come back. Your attention must come back to the breath. Then after some time, you feel some sensation arise on the body, pain, tingling, or heat, or cold, or hardness. Just ignore. If your mind go to the sensation on the body, then your concentration on the breath breaks. So you cannot develop deep concentration. So just ignore. Just know, then come back to the breath. And don't follow, your attention should not follow the breath up to the head or down to the abdomen. And if you still feel that the mind is so restless, then you use counting method. Counting the breath, breathing in, breathing out, one. Breathing in, breathing out, two. But you should pay attention on the breath, not the number. Until your mind settles down on the breath, then you give up. Don't count anymore. Give up counting. Okay. Then gradually you can feel the breath, long and short. Sometimes the in-breath is long, sometimes it's short. Sometimes the in-breath is short, sometimes the out-breath is long. So no matter how the breath appear to you, you just aware. You don't have to do anything. Don't change the flow of the breath. Just knowing, pure awareness, pure knowing, that's all. That's why this practice is very easy. Why it's easy? Because you don't have to do anything. Just aware of the breath. But when the mind goes off, come back in. The difficult part is the mind tends to go off on it. If you can place your mind all the time under the nose tree and aware of the breath, it becomes so easy. Because you don't have to do anything. Just observe, just aware, that's all. And this simple task can help you to go into very deep concentration. So if you sometimes you feel the life is so tough, you know, the mind is so many things to think, you know, you just want to leave the world, then sit down, empty your mind, aware of the breath. Then you will feel good. Okay. So as you keep on going, then the breath become more and more subtle. Then you start to aware. As your mindfulness becomes strengthened, you can observe the whole breath. The beginning, middle, and the end. You will not miss the beginning, or you will not miss the middle, you will not miss the end of the breath. You can follow very closely the whole breath. Now, beginning, middle, end. Our breath also beginning, middle, end. If you can follow very closely, it means that your mindfulness becomes very sharp. In the beginning, we just in and out. We cannot follow very precisely. But as time goes on, when your mindfulness and concentration improve, you can follow very closely. And at that time, the mind won't go out. The mind will steady. One-pointedness on the breath. If your mind can stay with the breath for, let's say, 40 minutes, 1 hour, then the light will appear. The light. In the beginning, the light appear far away from the nostril. It appear maybe in front, on your left hand side, right hand side, you know, far away from the nostril. When the light appear, it disappear very fast. The light can be very shine. If you look at it, it disappear even faster. So don't look at the light. You know the light has appeared. But your awareness, your attention remain on the breath. This light is produced by your concentration. If you leave your concentration, you no more concentrate on the breath, and you look at the light which is produced by your concentration on the breath, then because you no more concentrate on your breath, the light will disappear. But when a light appear, you do not pay attention to the light, you keep on paying attention on the breath, then the light will last longer. Last for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or 15 minutes. Then it disappear again. Okay. No matter how, you don't leave your attention, don't forget your breath. Always with the breath. When the concentration becomes deeper and deeper, the breath becomes subtle and subtle until you feel that so difficult to feel the breath because it becomes so subtle. If you cannot feel the breath anymore, it's also fine. You keep your attention under the nostril, or you breathe in a little bit, then the breath will appear again. As the concentration becomes deeper, the light will become closer. Closer, 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 then become here, very close to your nostril. In the beginning, the light appears as a smoke, gray color. We call parikrama nimitta. As the concentration deepens, it becomes white, like cotton wool. This is called Ugaha Nimitta. And when the concentration deepens again, this light will become transparent, radiant, sparkling light, diamond, like morning star. And if the light appears and lasts for half an hour without disappearing, then you can change your attention from the breath to this light. We call nimitta. Nimitta, the sign of concentration. So in the beginning, the light wouldn't last. So it's no point you concentrate on the light. But when the light becomes stable, nimitta becomes stable for half an hour, then this is the time you should forget the breath. Concentrate on nimitta. If you can concentrate on nimitta well, then you will find that your mind go very deep with the nimitta. If you can concentrate well on the nimitta for 1 hour without any thought, without any break, without any single thought arise, then you go to first jhana, first attainment, first absorption. When a yogi achieve first absorption, there are five jhana factors: vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Vitakka is application of thought. Vichara is sustained application of thought. Piti is joy. Sukha is happiness. Ekagata is one-pointedness. So when a yogi attain first jhana, these five jhana factors become very clear to him. So this is how a yogi, steady his mind, or make his mind settle down on the single object. And this is how a yogi should concentrate it. Should be trained to place his attention on a single object. Okay. So, and this person who has inside knowledge, but has no concentration, then he approach a person with concentration and ask him how to make the mind settle down. How to make the mind concentrated. Then once he learned the skill, then he practiced accordingly, he become a person who has both concentration and inside knowledge. Okay, so this is the second case. The third case, as for the individual who has attained neither internal tranquility of awareness nor insight into phenomena through heightened discernment, he should approach an individual who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment and ask him, how should the mind be steady? How should it be unified? How should it be concentrated? How should fabrication be regarded? He should ask both questions. How to concentrate the mind, then how to practice vipassana. How should fabrication be regarded? This is about vipassana, inside knowledge practice. How should fabrication be investigated? How should they be seen with insight? The other will answer in line with what he has seen and experienced. The mind should be steady in this way, as what I explained just now. The mind should be made to settle down in this way. The mind should be unified in this way. The mind should be concentrated in this way. Then he achieved concentration. Then after that, the other also will teach him how to practice vipassana. The fabrications or formation should be regarded in this way. The fabrications should be investigated in this way. The fabrications should be seen in this way with insight. Then eventually, the first he will become one who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment. Okay, the last one. As for the individual who has attained both internal tranquility of awareness and insight into phenomena through heightened discernment, his duty is to make an effort establishing those very same skillful qualities to a higher degree for the ending of the all refinements. So for those who have both, who already have both concentration and insight knowledge, he just has to put more effort now to establish he has to make more effort in establishing those very same skillful qualities that he has already possessed to a higher degree until he can eradicate all the defilements and make an end of all sufferings. So from this sutta, from Anguttara Nikaya, we can understand it is important to practice both concentration and insight knowledge. Buddha say very clearly in this sutta, those who has vipassana should approach, those who has vipassana, who know how to practice vipassana, who has insight knowledge, should but no concentration, should approach one who has concentration and ask him how to practice concentration. And those who have concentration but no vipassana knowledge should approach another one who has vipassana knowledge and ask him how to practice vipassana. And those who have none, neither vipassana and concentration, should approach a one who has both and learn the skill. And one who has both should put more effort to establish those skill who has possessed to the higher degree and to make an end of all suffering. But nowadays, most people emphasize on vipassana practice, less concentration practice. So this is against what Buddha say, not according with what Buddha say. So it's important to have both. If you only have one, please learn from another teacher. For example, if you just practice vipassana, then you should make an effort to learn from another teacher who can teach samatha. But if you have only samatha, no vipassana, then you should learn from another teacher who know how to teach vipassana. Then gradually you will have both. Okay, so this is the end of this sutta. Any question? Yes.
Two points. So someone who has neither concentration nor mindfulness should first learn.
Not mindfulness, Vipassana. Vipassana.
And not vipassana. Should first learn concentration. Then vipassana.
That Buddha didn't say. From this sutta, Buddha didn't say.
Okay, I thought it was.
But another sutta Buddha says, okay. Okay, let me read the sutta for you. On one occasion, also from Anguttara Nikaya, on one occasion, Venerable Ananda was staying in Kosambi at Gosita's monastery. There he addressed the monks, friends. Yes, friend, the monks respond. Venerable Ananda said, friends, whoever monk or nun declares the attainment of arahantship in my presence, they all do it by means of one or another of four paths. Which four? There is a case where a monk has developed insight preceded by tranquility. Means insight preceded by tranquility means tranquility first, insight second. Okay? As he develops insight preceded by tranquility, the path, magga phala, the path is born. He follows that path, develops it, pursues it, and he follows the path, developing it and pursuing it, his fetters are abandoned, his obsessions destroyed, all his defilements are destroyed. So this case is concentration first, vipassana later. Okay, the case two. Then there is another case where a monk has developed tranquility preceded by insight. This case means insight first, tranquility later. Okay. As he develops tranquility preceded by insight, the path is born. Okay, another case, the third one. Then there is another case where a monk has developed tranquility yoked together with insight, both together. Okay. As he develops tranquility yoked together with insight, then the path is born, magga phala is born. Then there is the case where a monk's mind has its restlessness concerning the Dhamma. This commentary says that the restlessness concerning the Dhamma is upakilesa, the corruption of insight. When a person reaches the inside knowledge, for example, the knowledge of arising and passing away, this person will see a lot of light. Then his wisdom becomes very sharp, his mindfulness becomes very alert. Now everything becomes so sharp. Then he starts to attach to that experience. This is called corruption of insight. It becomes a hindrance for him because of his attachment to this spatial, extraordinary experience. Okay. So then, now this person, now then there is the case where a monk's mind has its restlessness concerning the Dhamma, means the corruption of insight. There comes a time when his mind grows steady inwardly, settled down and becomes unified and concentrated. In him, the path is born. So there are four cases. Whoever, monk or nun, declares the attainment of arahantship in my presence, they all do it by means of one or another of these four paths. So answer your question. Some start with vipassana first, followed by concentration. Some start with concentration first, followed by insight. And another one yoked together. The last one is a little bit special one.
What number is that sutta? What number?
Sutta. Anguttara Nikaya 4. Anguttara is follow the number. Number 4. 170. 170 sutta. Okay.
Second question I have. When in the sutta they talk about concentration, does that mean reaching first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, or does that just mean access concentration before the first jhana?
If you follow the sutta clearly, usually when the Buddha mentioned concentration, usually he explained first jhana up to fourth jhana. But nowadays, many people also feel that excess concentration should be enough to achieve sotapanna. No need jhana concentration. Excess concentration should be enough to achieve sotapanna. But when Buddha talked about concentration, usually he mentioned up to fourth jhana. Okay, any other question? So don't belittle concentration practice. Don't look down concentration practice. Okay, if there's no question, we stop here.